The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Wandsworth Radio. We are here with another episode of the Blackshaw Arts Hour this evening on this very balmy winter's evening, which is just weird. I can't get my head around it. I'm in the studio tonight with Matt Boothman.
Hello.
And Ellie Pitkin.
Hello.
Matt's back. We missed Matt.
We did.
Last show.
We shed a metaphorical tear.
Aww.
Only a metaphorical one, of course.
No, not real. So on the show tonight we have Helen is bringing us a nice little review of The Night from Nowhere / The Bells, which was on, well, is still on at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park at the moment. I saw it last week.
As did Ellie.
And we are going to be, because we're very excited about Great Expectations, which we've been talking a lot about the last couple of shows, we're going to hear a nice little interview with myself, Marcus, and Andy, who is our sound extraordinaire man. We're also going to be talking to you about what we're doing on the next show, which is our live Scare Slam, which it's all getting a bit confusing. This happened live a couple of weeks ago, and then we're playing it live on the radio.
I think you should have to refer to it as a live recording.
I'm making things very difficult.
Just use that term, live recording.
Live recording of the Scare Slam that we put on at the Horse and Stables. But the first thing that we're doing is this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
There is a lot of dancing happening in the studio tonight.
I'm feeling festive.
We are moving about quite a lot. And Matt is doing...
I'm doing The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2.
Oof.
Which is a mouthful.
It's a big title.
Yeah. So this is the fourth and final installment in the Hunger Games series. I guess they can technically call it a trilogy because the last film is just one film split in two, but it's four films, so it's a series.
Yeah.
For anybody not familiar with the premise, it's a sort of dystopian future America that has been split into the affluent capital where everybody eats oysters every night and wears elaborate clothes, and all the districts around it which are sort of enslaved almost to provide the capital with resources, coal, wood, etc., all the things it needs to keep going. And they run a regular gladiatorial games involving tributes from all of the districts in order to keep everybody subdued and subjugated. This foments a rebellion, and this is the final installment where Katniss Everdeen, our heroine, has finally sort of fought her way through this, that, and the other, and has finally got her sort of singular objective of, I have to go to the Capitol and I have to kill the president, played by Donald Sutherland. She's played by Jennifer Lawrence. So this should be, I feel like this should be a really, really focused final installment, because like I say, almost all of the subplots are resolved around it, and there's literally just that one objective left to our main character. I feel like I enjoyed it, and I think it was a good film and a good ending. But I think it was actually more of an appropriate resolution than a good ending, if that makes any sense. So what we get is this movie is it's a string of moments, each resolving a particular sort of thread or theme that's been running through the movies. So we have the sort of the ground war of the rebellious districts versus the capital soldiers. The PR war of the hearts and minds side of the conflict. We have the very personal conflict between Katniss and President Snow. And we have the romantic thread as well of is Katniss going to end up with Josh Hutcherson's Peter or Liam it is Liam. I get the Hemsworth confused.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. Liam Hemsworth's Gale, her childhood friend. I came out of it thinking I really enjoyed that, but I feel like it had pacing issues, and I felt like some of the emotional stuff didn't Like, I didn't cry in it. I didn't get really choked up at any particular point. I think it's partly because they resolve all of these beats one by one instead of having one big climax where everything resolves at once, which is what I kind of expect from a big Hollywood blockbuster, especially one that has made that decision to split the finale in two specifically so that they can resolve things at the pace that they want. As has been true of all of these movies, the PR aspect of it, I think, is the strongest. So of those things that it's resolving, this has always been a series about sort of the image side of conflict and the a death matters less than what you can make that death mean. So every time somebody important dies, it's both sides rushing to put out some sort of press release or TV broadcast to say, spinning that death to their own ends. And the whole series has been about the acts of oppression and of rebellion and of war as spectacle and as televised entertainment. Mm. And that aspect of it, I think it came through more strongly in Mockingjay Part 1, which was very much about the PR and the propaganda side, but it still is the strongest aspect of this one, I think. And it kind of ties in with the character of Katniss Everdeen. Her main sort of strength or advantage, as far as I can see, is that while everybody around her is very concerned about what she represents and what all of her actions can be made to mean, she seems to be the only person who doesn't really care about how she is spun. She just does things. She does what she feels to be right without really any regard to what that's going to mean in PR terms. And that seems to be the advantage that she has over a lot of the other characters. The ground war aspect of it is kind of weird. It's kind of removed. This is finally the one where Katniss gets to go into the capital and actually fight her way through. But she and her squad are sort of miles from the front line in this one. So the actual fighting is happening miles away, and we see it in glimpses, and we hear it in the distance. Yeah. But it's all sort of in the background and reported, which again I think is quite a savvy move for the movie.
Because I didn't realise actually until you've just said that. We don't actually see any big fight scenes.
Until right at the end at the president's residence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's interesting because you think that, especially with a film, you know, franchise like this, you always expect it to go down that route. And I kind of like that it hasn't. I like that, like you said, they're solving each thing and then moving on instead of everything becoming muddied and, you know, together. It is paced strangely, but it's not. I think it's just strange. It's just because you're not used to it. It's not Lord of the Rings.
It keeps it on quite a nice sort of personal, individual level because you're not getting giant clashes of armies where you're just going sort of,
which is unrelatable.
This is a big CG scene and I can't really tell what's going on. Mm. It's still down to individual, you know, it's a small enough squad that you can kind of care about each individual person's fate still, rather than it being a big army of sort of faceless people. And that, again, that's what the series has always been about, is caring about people as opposed to giant movements, you know, a single person being the face of a movement. Katniss and her friends, her comrades, hardly face any actual soldiers. They don't really face any people. They're facing off mostly against traps and monsters. Mm. The action side of it is almost less real than the PR war.
Yeah,
in a way, the action that they face is kind of fantastical.
Yeah, it's Hunger Games stuff. It's stuff that, you know, happens in that scenario, in the, you know, the gameplay situation. Like, some of the stuff that happens in this film is just, you can't get your head around it.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't often be mouth agape in a cinema. I mean, it's not a good look. But it is dark, so, you know, like, no one can see you. But a couple of times I was just looking around the cinema being like, I can't believe this is happening. What's going on?
This installment is a full-on horror movie for about half an hour.
It's terrifying. I was so anxious the entire time. Like, for the middle bit, I was grabbing someone next to me because I was terrified. Yeah. It's really...
You'll be able to tell. Aisha and I have both seen it. Ellie's seen it as well. Ellie is the only one in the room who's read the books. Yeah. So I'm interested to know, because I've been saying, like, the strength of this series is the focus on the sort of the PR and the how you spin conflict and all that sort of stuff. I'm interested to know whether you think that's something that the filmmakers have chosen to focus on, or was that a strength in the books as well?
I think it's one of several. I think it's definitely a decision that the filmmakers have taken to make that a big focus, and I guess because it works for the medium they're communicating in. I think, going back to what you said about pace and it being a bit strange, and there being kind of, because they're solving problem by problem, it's like there's multiple endings to the story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like that in the book, because they didn't split the third book into two books. and I always get frustrated when filmmakers do that. And I understand the reasons. I mean, they did it with the last Harry Potter film, for example. Mm. And I understand that it's because they want to fit in. Often it's because they want to fit in as much as they can from the book. And to do that in the medium of film, you need to extend it across several films. But I felt like it didn't make sense for this book. It's not a big, chunky book like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. It's quite a slim volume. It didn't take me long to read. I mean, it's aimed at kind of the teen market. It's not something that needed splitting at all. And I think that each of the books in the Hunger Games series kind of have a distinct focus. And to split that focus in that final book made the films feel a little bit fragmented, I think. I mean, they were very true to the books, which was a real plus for someone who's read them and enjoyed them, but yeah, it did feel disjointed.
I seem to be a bit of an outlier in that I really like Mockingjay Part 1.
Yeah, see,
I think that worked really well
as a
standalone
film. Yeah, I
thought it
was great. See, I found it quite boring, but that's just me and my attention span. I mean, I'm not very good at watching films.
But then, so if they'd have combined the last two films, that
would have been
Think it would have. No, I think it would have been a great film.
Do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the book holds together so well, because it's those stages of. Well, no spoilers, but it's kind of the final stages of the story. They make sense put together. They don't make as much sense split up. It feels like they went, oh, well, we really like the bit where she goes into the capital and she has to, with her squad come up against all of these pre-laid traps. Let's make that really long.
Let's just do a whole film about that.
Because, I mean, filmically, that's great. It was a really fantastic section of the film, and it was gripping, and it was terrifying, and it was, I thought, fantastically done in terms of visuals. It was really great.
Oh, yeah.
But, it didn't need to be that long.
My only gripe with that bit is that they introduce... I mean, having said they give her a sort of small enough squad that you can get to know them all, they do pack that squad with a fair few sort of new faces, and it feels very late in the game to be introducing new characters. When you've got three movies worth of supporting characters you could pull in to give us people that we actually have some relationship with, so that we might feel something when they die, as opposed to, oh, that guy who we've just met half an hour ago got caught in a trap. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like they're in a room and they're like, calming down after a really big ordeal, and you're going, oh, that guy's gone now. Oh, he's not made it to the room.
And
oh dear.
I can't remember reading the books whether it felt like that. I think in the books, because you're encountering everything as Katniss, you maybe do have characters like that where they don't last very long, but you feel emotional about it because you're experiencing what Katniss is experiencing, which is the horrors of being there. And I think when it's film, you're a little bit removed from it. It's quite different than reading a book where it's all in your head and actually happening.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a weird one for me because I loved Harry Potter films, but I never read the books. But it makes me want to go and read these books.
They're great. You should read them.
Yeah, and a lot of people said that, they're quite easy to read. They're not really challenging and you get through them quite quickly. I've never really had that after seeing a film, because obviously you know what's happened now. It's not, nothing's going to be a surprise for me, but I think I might start reading
them. I think you'd enjoy them. I think they're a good travelling book, and I know you've got some travelling coming up.
Yes, I do. More on that later.
But they are they're an easy read. I mean, I'm quite a fast reader, but I think they took me maybe a day per book. They're not
really.
Yeah, they're not long, and because they're written in such a kind of flowing manner, it's very easy to get hooked and to really just want to read all of it.
Do you think if they'd left the last book as one movie, they'd have been less prone to the sort of, I feel like it had Lord of the Rings syndrome where it ended too many times.
Oh, you know? My
it
goodness.
Definitely should have ended about 10
Seriously,
minutes before
what
it
is,
did.
What's wrong with that?
I think yes, because I think part of the problem is that you have several like themes and characters and plot strings introduced in the first of those two films. And every time they pick up on them in the second of the two films, they kind of have to do things to remind you what you're looking at,
yeah.
what you're watching. And if it was all one film, they'd be able to establish characters and strings and then just, you know, take those shortcuts that you can take when you know that your audience is already trained into it.
Yeah.
We said you cannot watch this not having recently seen part one.
Yes, I would. That would be my one tip for going to see this film, because it is fantastic. It's probably one of my favourites of this year. But please see part one before you go and see part two, or you run the risk of being me in the cinema, having to lean over to my partner being like, what is happening? I don't know. I didn't watch it that long ago. I think I fell asleep in the end of the part one. I found it, a bit tedious. But, definitely go and see part one before you see part two.
Overall, as a series, I think it's so strong. I want to go back and sort of marathon all four of them. They're all great.
I'm a bit upset that it's finished.
I was bereft.
And also because I hadn't heard anything about it, so I didn't know what it was about at all before I saw the films. Like, the capital stuff, I'm so intrigued by the capital.
Yeah.
And looking at outfits and makeup and just how, is it Effie?
Yeah. Elizabeth Banks,
How she looks in it throughout.
She is incredible. Actually, I think that's one thing the film, they did lots of things amazingly, but I think the character of Effie, they really nailed her journey. And seeing her in her finery when you first meet her, and then in another version of it in that final scene with her, I think was fantastic. And I think the good thing about having the two films was that you could indulge in those moments that you get in the book and do it properly, because you know when you do cut them down, you do have to lose some elements of the book.
And on that note, as a final thing, note what I haven't said about this, which is X person is the only woman in the film.
Yes.
There are tons of women, and they're all in very different sort of conflicting positions. There are some sort of throwaway women in the squad, and there are important political women and important military women, and lots of very different women. And
It is very strong.
Yeah, I haven't had to say that thing I'm sick of saying about other movies about this one.
I think because we're coming to the end of the year, I would like to take all of the films that Matt has done and sort them out into a pile of Bechdel winning and not so much.
Yeah.
I think that will be quite scary and maybe a little bit sad, but I'm going to do it anyway.
All right.
So, as I said before at the start of the show, we are playing you the live recording of our Scare Slam in a fortnight's time, so we won't actually be talking to you on the radio in that episode of the Black Show Arts Hour, but Matt is going to be... Well, that was really your last film. Of
2015?
Yeah.
Of our first year of the show, yeah.
Yeah, basically Matt's getting cut from the show next year. No, you're not. No, he's coming back. We're all coming back, so that'll be nice. But we're going to be hearing some of Matt and Vicky's retro reviews to take us out towards the end of the year. So that's going to be, I believe, I'm playing Watchmen.
Okay.
That's coming up.
Oh.
And also Old Boy. That fun film, you know.
two
that really
pretty,
Christmassy film.
Yeah, both very lighthearted and fun.
Yes. Well, because we're not going to be here actually live on the radio for you, I wanted to talk to... I really like putting Matt on the spot.
Yeah.
That's one thing I love doing. And I'm going to ask you what your favourite Christmas film of all time is.
Now, I'm really struggling with this. Like, the one that I loved as a kid and that I made my... like that me and my brother both made our parents let us watch over and over again was The Santa Claus, which I think is probably
Tim what's his face
yeah
Tim Allen
yeah it is
oh,
Tim
that
Allen yeah
looks
which
awful.
I know and I I'm sure it doesn't hold up, but that was the one that we loved way back then.
That's interesting.
Like, all my favorite Christmas films now are like the ironic Christmas films that aren't really Christmas films, like Die Hard or Man 3, like action movies that are set at Christmas.
Die Hard is one of my he's in the
because
top three.
Like, movie Scrooged, Bill Murray's Scrooged is a good one that is actually a Christmas film.
I think you guys are forgetting a really highbrow Christmas film.
Are you talking about the
Muppet Christmas Carol?
Yeah. I hate to say this, but I watched it for the first time last year and I didn't really like it.
I think you've got to come to it as a child.
Yeah.
Muppet.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Muppets. I've never got on board with the Muppets.
Aisha, you're making me so sad.
I'm sorry. Mine is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation because I am in love with Chevy Chase.
Can I just put in a quick word for my favourite Christmas TV series?
Yes.
I'll reveal it after the next section.
Cliffhanger.
Okay. Well, with that excitingness, I'm going to play you Helen Johnson's review of The Night from Nowhere / The Bells at the Park Theatre, which she saw last week.
I've not been to the Park Theatre before. Neither have I seen anything by our lovely friends ACS Random, long-lasting connection with Blackshaw. So when Ellie asked if I wanted to go and see The Night from Nowhere / The Bells, I thought, well, that is an intriguing enough title that it's about time that I give it a go, and now is as good a time as any. The play can be seen either as one large piece with those two titles, or you can see the first half as one production and the second half as a separate but connected production. I really liked that, actually. I thought that was really fun, and the different tones of the first and the second half were really enjoyable. So taking the first half, The Night from Nowhere, it's about historic, iconic actor Henry Irving. I say historic, iconic. I've never heard of him before, but that didn't affect my enjoyment at all. It was really excellent piece. It was looking back on his life with a sort of side-eye, sly expression. And it kind of had a Christmas Carol feel about it. So he was sort of seeing different characters and looking back on things and popping in and out of the scenarios as they were taking place. And that was really lovely. It was really good fun. And it gave you ideas about different facets of his character, his public face, obviously the important one that history's got best record of, and his private face. He's not necessarily, you know, a perfect man. He was not that great to women or whatever, and potentially wasn't even that great an actor. But The Night from Nowhere really makes you like Irving. It was really charming. It was so beautifully performed. When Andrew and Angela were on stage together being these big, old-fashioned thespian types, it was just adorable, and the rest of the cast were fantastic too. Second of all, as I said, The Bells. It was, I suppose, a ghost story, but the reason why it was next to The Night from Nowhere was because it was a significant piece in the life of Irving and in his career. It had so much charm. I really adored it. You know, it was very funny, but at one point I was genuinely really afraid. I think I was possibly more afraid than was intended, but well done, ACS Random. It was just really well rounded out. It was a great evening. The Park Theatre is beautiful, and the production was really good fun. And what more can you ask for, eh?
That was Helen talking to us about The Night from Nowhere / The Bells, which is on at the Park Theatre. I can second that the Park Theatre is a beautiful theatre. It's a lovely place to spend the evening. But before we go into breaking down this particular play, Ellie is going to tell us what her favourite Christmas series is.
It's The Box of Delights, which is a BBC TV series from 1984.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm going to make you watch it. I watched it as a child, and it's just insane and wonderful and very bizarre, which I wouldn't have said it was insane and bizarre until I showed it to some friends as an adult, and they all said that it was weird.
You are quite the Box of Delights evangelist.
I am. You need to all watch it. It will make you feel such
people?
Things.
I've never heard of that. I'm gonna look it up though.
For anyone out there who has watched it, the wolves are running.
If you have seen that weird show that Ellie's talking about, you can tweet us.
Please do, so I don't feel alone.
Yeah, please help us out.
At Blackshore Update on Twitter.
That's where we are.
You can find us on Facebook as well. Everything's on our website, blackshoreonline.com.
Yes. So The Night from Nowhere, Ellie. You saw it?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I liked it.
With my eyes. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really nice kind of Christmassy but not too Christmassy show. It's at the Park Theatre, which is a fantastic venue. Really love that place. And the cast were incredible. It's a very strong ensemble piece. There were quite a lot of kind of in-jokes for theatre folk, which I really enjoyed. I don't know if you'll know what I mean when I say exit pursued by a bear.
Nope, yeah. I missed that.
No, oh, Boothman's in. it's one of Shakespeare's famous stage directions.
When he just did not know how to get somebody off stage, so he jotted down exit pursued by a bear. There's no bear in the rest of the scene.
It's bizarre and wonderful, and it happens in this show. So it's kind of like an Easter egg. So if you please do go and see it and look out for that bit. And you were asking Aisha what Helen meant about the scary bit.
Yes.
There's a horse.
Oh yeah, the horse. Yeah. So the ensemble cast make up the body of a horse, and I think there is someone wearing a horse's headish.
It's kind of a conceptual horse's head.
Yes,
yeah.
It's not a realistic horse.
It's the sound that's kind of overwhelming. The sound is something that's a real strength of the piece, actually, because it's all kind of, you know, centered around traditional Victorian theatre, and that includes the methods of that theatre. So there's obviously it's called The Bells, and there is recurring bell noises in both The Night from Nowhere and The Bells, and they're live actual bells that are attached.
Jangly.
Yeah, and they're all wound up on bits of string, so you can pull one bit to make them all jingle.
Yeah,
which I found very satisfying.
It was a beautiful, beautiful piece. I mean, I walked in and Zara, who did Alice in Wonderland for us, all the costume and set design for that. With the help of Michelle Bristow. Zara's stuff and Zara's costume, I can see from a mile away.
Yeah.
Because she is so on point. And I walked in and I was like, well, this is a Zara set. This is lovely. It had, a beautiful window. And the lighting.
Oh my goodness.
I think they're up for an award.
They are.
On lighting.
They've been nominated for an Offie.
Yeah.
Which is well deserved because the lighting was really atmospheric and really slick and clean.
So slick.
Yeah.
It's a professional piece, but it just really upped its, like, that the lighting in it just really upped it to make it look just outstanding. And it's good because, like, you know, you say about the fact that there's Easter eggs for theatre people. I'm not of that background, and I still enjoyed it. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's quite accessible. I didn't even know who Henry Irving was. Neither did Helen, actually, from listening to her review.
Well, it's really, I love a bit of history, so it was nice to add to my history knowledge.
History and theatre.
They are my two favourite things.
In one.
Yeah, no, it's really great. When is it running till?
It is running up until the 19th of December.
Oh, so get booking, people.
It's a 4-week run, actually. I was talking to Andrew Shepherd, who wrote it after the show, who stars in it. He was saying that he can't believe that they let him do it, which is always nice to hear.
Well, I mean, obviously, as the writer, he's a huge, huge fan of Henry Irving. And they actually started Theatre Heroes Day a few weeks ago, which is going to run on an annual basis now, which is a fantastic idea. It's just where you kind of tweet and stuff about who your theatre is. Mm. Who your theatre is? Who your hero is. Theatre hero. It's a really great piece and some really standout performances, but a really strong ensemble cast overall. And, you know, really funny in places, very touching in places, and really, it's kind of family friendly. Good one to go and see with the folks.
Yes. Go and see it. And also, if you haven't been to the park, then all the more reason to go because the Park Theatre is great. So The Night from Nowhere / The Bells is playing up until the 19th of December. And you should go and see it.
Yep.
Because it's good. We're going to talk to you a little bit about Great Expectations now, which is dropping on the 3rd of December. January. Oh, my God.
That one.
It's nearly the end of the year.
Dates are so confusing at this time of year.
Oh, I don't know what's happening. I actually had to write down 2016 for the first time the other day, and I was like, no, this is weird.
I always spend the whole of January accidentally writing the wrong year.
yeah, same.
Yeah, living in the past.
But Great Expectations adaptation in collaboration with Cyphers.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Correct. It's Marcus Baisley's first ever adapted piece for radio. So he adapted it from a book for the stage, and then he adapted it from the stage for the radio.
Because the man loves adapting.
He loves to adapt. He's adapting as we speak.
What's he adapting at the moment?
I'm not sure if I can tell you.
Oh, secrets. Okay.
I do know, though. But we will be...
Reveal that next year.
Yes. Yes, he might kill me if I
do. It's all about the cliffhangers this evening.
So many cliffhangers.
It's because it's like last live show. I think we're all like, you know, trying to hook people.
Add some tension.
Please listen to us next year.
Yeah, we'll tell you all the things.
All our secrets.
Anyway, moving on. This is a interview that I did with Marcus Baisley and Andy, who's our sound extraordinaire.
Andrew Crane, who's been slaving away over the sound editing.
So much slaving, yes.
Because it's kind of, I guess they are basically the two creators of the piece, because the actors do a hard day's work of talking.
Months ago.
But they do hours of writing and then hours of sound editing.
Yes.
And of course, Andrew is one of the backstage heroes of Staying Alive as well.
He is.
Just finished the run.
He is.
He's a total rock star.
We've not really given him a rest at all. I'm so sorry, Andy. Every time I text him, I'm like, don't hate me.
I think I mentioned this at the after show for Staying Alive, which was very wrong of me.
Yeah,
I must apologise for that.
It's because I'm not on his back about it, but I'm like, hey, Andy, how's Great Expectations going? And I see his eyes just fall.
He's loving it.
Yes, he is. He is having a very good time. He said to me the other day, I spent my Wednesday evening jangling cutlery around in my flat to record it for the sounds.
Oh, well, you have to tune in to find out what sound that might have been for. Foley fun.
Yeah.
Hashtag Foley fun.
So yeah, Great Expectations is happening on the 3rd of January. This is sort of an interview about, because obviously we recorded it so long ago back in, I think it was October, or maybe before
September,
October.
I think.
Was it September? Oh man, yeah. Long time ago. And because it was so long ago when we sat down to do this interview, we all had to remember what it was that we actually did. And we were sat back in the same room that we'd recorded it in, and it was just all very bizarre. So here is that interview. So we are sitting in the room where we recorded Great Expectations. Yeah. We're back again.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
So what happened was, I'll give you a brief idea of what we're putting together in the realms of Great Expectations for the radio. We were in this big room, in this recording room, for an entire Sunday, from about 10 o'clock till about 8 o'clock in the evening, with all of the cast members from the original production.
From the original stage production, yeah.
Yeah,
plus
some more. So I think we had about eight
I think
or
it was
nine.
More than that, wasn't
or,
it?
No, it was 13, I think. God, yeah. I should have researched this. It was a very long time ago. We're all sitting in this room and we're trying to figure out if this actually happened or if it was a dream.
Yeah, it was a dream. It doesn't actually exist.
So I'll introduce who I'm sitting here with. Obviously, Marcus Baisley is here, who directed his first ever radio production, I guess.
Yes,
that's something to put on your CV.
My first radio adaptation as well.
Yeah. And also Rupert Sadler, who played Pip once
yes,
more.
Yes, once again, but yeah. Also off the checklist doing a radio play as well. So
yeah. Yeah. And also joining us excitingly is Andy.
Hello.
And Andy made
Andy
sure...
Andy is so excited to actually have his voice.
Yeah, because Andy is normally the person sat behind, well, you know, behind everything that's happening and not on microphone at all, because he needs to be listening intently to every sound we are recording at the time.
I'm still kind of alien to me to actually allow myself to make noise. It's a really strange feeling.
So let's start off by trying to remember how we felt about the whole day of, I mean, for me it was a pretty intense process, and it was something that I think we did very, very effectively and we did very well, but it was quite an alien thing to do, especially for you guys, probably coming from, you know, what you guys do on a stage to acting, you know, not on a stage. Rupert, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's the first time I've ever had to do a play not in order, which is strange, because it's almost more like a TV or a film set where you have to work with your character, almost taking him apart, for example, Pip, my character, who I've always done from being a child to being an adult in one consistent arc, and that's always been very helpful to just naturally go through the journey with my character. But this time, it's very challenging, but also very rewarding, because you really get to control your character and properly master it, because then you can go, okay, this scene, I'm Pip, who's 21 years old, and he's on a boat with Magwitch, and 10 minutes later, I'll be Child Pip. And what's he done? He doesn't know the stuff that's in the scene I've just done, but he knows this, he doesn't know this. And it's quite interesting having to always make sure that your character stays consistent despite the chronology you're rehearsing and recording isn't consistent.
I think that's a testament to you and knowing the character very well, is the fact that on the day, that wasn't an issue for you at all. And to put that into context, the way that we recorded on this particular day, for this entire day, we split up all of the scenes, which, you know, Great Expectations, as you know, is quite lengthy. So we split it all up into, and made sure that all of the characters were sort of lumped together doing all their scenes in the same amount, sort of same time period, so that we could, you know, get things done a bit more quickly. Marcus, how did you look at your play and go, oh my goodness, it's all over the shop? Like, was that a bit daunting for you?
It wasn't actually. For me, I think it was easier because we'd had so long working on the most of us anyway, had a long time working on the play itself, and I'd been with the adaptation for a long, long time. I know the story far too well, but it was great because I got to come back to it and change it. I had to change it for the radio, and it's made it better as a result. I'm confident of that. I think it showed how effective our rehearsal process had been for the original stage play, that without the original cast didn't have any rehearsals before we recorded it. They just turned up, and I kind of just trusted the work we'd done however many months beforehand was still going to be there. But we did have a rehearsal with all the new people as well, so we made sure that they had a go through and they knew what they were doing. But the ordering didn't really bother me at all, actually. I think because my brain immediately was just putting it in the right order as it went along.
Yeah, I think it bothered me a little bit more than you did, possibly.
But there was only the slight fear of actually missing the scene things. Out completely.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, from Andy's perspective, it was an entire day of Andy sat at a computer just making sure all this audio was going through correctly, sounding correct.
Yeah.
And I mean, jumping ahead from what we're talking about now, but to an editing process, and, you know, we at Blackshaw are quite new to... And also Cyphers, I mean, this is your first radio.
Completely new.
Yeah. So we're sort of, you know, at times doing these radio productions a bit on the fly. Andy is bearing the brunt of the editing process currently.
Yeah, it's a long process, but luckily, the team have actually sorted out the whole ordering of the day. Helen, I think, did most of the work there, didn't she?
Helen was amazing.
Instrumental.
I wouldn't have known where to begin without Helen. She did a phenomenal job at making the day happen.
Yeah, and I think the thing that we've learned in doing this is that organisation is key in terms of making sure that you get everything.
No, absolutely.
And especially for you, I mean, hopefully it makes your job easier.
No, it's the whole, like, sort of the way it's been divided up into the episodes. Obviously, because there's seven episodes that are split across, and each of those episodes has been divided up into scenes, so they were each recorded separately. And so it's just a case, it's literally been a case so far of going through all the recordings, figuring out which scene and episode they're from, then cutting them together.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily, again, like, the cast were absolutely fantastic. Like, the amount of just one take scenes we had are an absolute dream to work with.
It was actually astonishing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and it was almost like we were straight back on stage. And it was amazing to watch that you guys just go, yeah, okay, brilliant, that's it. It helped, and I think because we deliberately wanted to make it feel as much like the stage play as possible, whilst still making it very definitely a radio play, but that you all felt natural. So we did have movement. You were able to move around while you were recording it, rather than it being, I'm stood in front of a microphone with my script behind the mic, flipping the pages. It was much more free and like we were recording a stage play rather than in a studio recording a radio play.
It felt way more relaxing getting into it, just to feel, even though obviously you're recording it, just to have that slight impression of actually being on the stage again, because I think that just gives you so much freedom to just be, okay, I can almost, obviously no one will be able to see this, but I can physically do my character as well, which I think helps massively, especially when you've got such caricatures as Pumblechook and all these different characters, Bentley Drummle, these larger than life Dickensian people, and you need to physicalize it, and I know for myself I needed to physicalize it. So, yeah, no, it was really beneficial to do that.
Yeah, I think that was our aim going into it initially. was to get as much movement as possible, or as the microphones sort of allowed. And I think it came across, from what I've heard, obviously we're still in the edit stage at the moment.
You can tell when someone's moving and when someone isn't.
Yeah.
And more than that, you can tell when someone is stopping themselves moving, because their voice sounds slightly blocked. Mm. There is a tension in them that isn't being released, and so their voice isn't full and rounded and energised.
Yeah. Marcus, is there anything that you're worried about in hearing it when we've got to the stage where we're ready to listen?
There's one, aeroplanes. Aeroplanes,
okay.
Were a bit.
Yeah, that's something we might need to explain.
I suppose the other thing I'm worried about a little bit is sound effects, because part of our... Sorry, Andy, I trust you completely.
Job.
But for me, it's completely alien, because the way that I work as a director on stage is we have no recorded sound at all. It's all... the actors making the sounds themselves, and it's all live, and we might use things to make noise. We might rattle a chain or bang on something or whatever. That's but it the idea of introducing some sort of proper recorded sound kind of scares me quite a lot.
I can imagine. I think it's interesting in doing, I mean, this is our first ever co-production with another company, and obviously Cypher's, every show that I've seen, you don't use any sound, there's no lighting, and now we've made you do something where we're like, no, but you have to have sound, because this is the radio.
Yeah.
And they're not going to understand if someone's on a boat if they don't hear a boat noise.
Yeah.
And I think for you that must be super daunting, because you know, that's just, that's not,
yeah,
the
it
thing
is,
you're
it
used
is.
To
but equally what we lose in a sort of what you might call a pure Cypher's element with the sound, we gain through the fact that you can't see anything. So the whole thing about Cypher's is about your imagination, and really the radio is more so than stage is about your imagination, because you there's nothing there to see, so you can imagine what the characters look like as well as, you know, as well as what the world looks like.
Yeah, and I think that will really come down to, obviously we had fantastic actors come in on the day and do fantastic one take, you know, scenes, which was great, but also their huge amounts of enthusiasm and passion for their characters, because you've done it before and you have these connections, completely came across in an audio format, which I think is going to be brilliant. One thing that maybe, which is quite different to the stage show of this, the narrator.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The thing that's most different is that we have one narrator running through.
As previous to
when we were on stage, it was a 5-person ensemble cast. Rupert was Pip the whole way through,
yes,
but the other four
were the adult
Pip, and they all narrated it equally, and then they sort of dissolved into characters and came out of them again. But we did feel, and I think rightly, that for the radio, all those different voices would have just been so confusing, and no one would have had a clue who was speaking. So we had to tie it together with one voice. And well, I mean, Jeremy's done a brilliant job from everything that I've heard so far.
Yeah.
At tying everything together.
Beautiful, beautiful voice.
Well, has resonant deep tones. It's like butter. It's just melts on the eardrums. It's wonderful. It makes me look forward to editing. It's just like
molten gobs. I remember doing... I met Jeremy a few days before, and just because he's the older me, essentially, in that play. And it was just nice to immediately, straight off the cuff, there was just that immediate connection of older Pip and younger Pip, and was like, yeah, no, you're definitely me in the future. And I think he felt the same way, and it was just nice seeing the sort of, because obviously in the play it's a 5-person, so you can't really be like, oh, I'm going to be these 5 people when I'm at the end of my character arc. But it's quite nice seeing the similarities and differences in the voice at the end, which was beautiful.
I think Andy, I'd like to know what you're most worried about now, because obviously you've got a huge job, and as we were saying, you've got a lot of sound effects to make.
Yep.
Which I know that you love doing.
Well, I do.
But there is a lot. And
no,
some of them are quite weird, like, you know, create the soundscape of the marshes.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think my main concern is doing it justice, because the actors did such a fantastic job. I want to be able to, you know, just help that along with my sounds. because it was such, before, like, on stage again, like Marcus was saying, it was such a production that focused on not having sound effects. I didn't see that. I was like, I've come to this completely afresh, without even knowing the story of Great Expectations, really. So it's just trying to come from that from a fresh perspective and hoping that I do Marcus's production justice and Cypher's like all, yeah, because there's a lot of excellent work gone into it. And it feels like it's now all down to me, and I don't want to.
Well, it is.
Don't want to mess it up. Yeah.
Well, I think the fact that you're fresh to it is actually quite good, because we all know it so well that you will know when a sound effect is absolutely necessary, where I wouldn't necessarily, because I might be looking at it going, well, it's obvious where they are.
Because you can visualise. Like,
oh yeah,
it.
Because yeah. I've been working with this play for a long, long time,
yeah.
And I've done it. I've got about five, probably more than that, versions of the play like lying around.
Yeah, you've got a big back catalogue there now.
Yeah, we can do all the different versions of Great Expectations. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's speaking about versions, this is quite a different version because we have cut it up. So as we're going to be playing it out on the Blackshire Arts Hour, it's going to be in 7 parts. So we're going to start, and every fortnight you're going to hear the next part of it. How do you think that's going to affect the rhythm of the play?
I think it's brilliant. I'm really pleased.
Well, see, you were quite excited about it because it's the way that Dickens wrote it.
Yeah, it's the way that Dickens did it originally, and it was very exciting for me to go back to the novel and then find where he'd put deliberate cliffhangers in the novel and then put those back into the adaptation. Mm. Anything's great when you have an episode that ends on "Don't go home," and then that's it. You know? Then you've got to wait 2 weeks to find out why. I think that's what it was all about when he wrote it. It's great. You feel like we're getting closer to the essence of what Dickens was doing.
Yeah. I'm very excited about hearing it and hearing... Andy laughs at me every time I say that because he's so terrified of hitting his deadline. But you're going to hit it, buddy. It's going to be great.
Yeah. We're on track.
Thanks very much, guys, for coming back and trying to... you know, remember and relive the experience that was that fateful day a couple of months ago. It was great fun. And I think, I mean, we here at the Blackshire Arts Hour love doing radio plays and love sort of pushing ourselves. This is the second one we've done now. Have you got any other ideas for radio? Did this sort of experience make you want to do more?
Definitely.
Sound?
Yeah? I'd love to work more with radio. I think generally our plays would work on the radio as a whole. I mean, even the play that we never seem to get away from, Henry V, which is I think even that could work on the radio. We've done it twice on stage, so you might as well do it on the radio as well.
Yeah, we're up for that.
I think because of the storytelling nature of the way we work, radio suits that very well. Mm-hmm. So I would like to do more. And I think if we move, which we almost certainly will, do more novel adaptations, novels should work well on the radio as well.
Well, as Andy leaves us now to probably go and edit Great Expectations so that we can play it for you very soon. Both of those things. Andy's our fantastic sound man on this show. We are going to be... releasing Great Expectations in 2016, January. It's going to be fresh. What are you guys, Cyphers, what are you doing in 2016? What are the plans?
I don't know.
Sorry, yeah. 2016.
I feel like you're definitely doing something.
Yeah.
What's in the pipeline?
No, we have got plans.
Is it a secret?
Some things are secret and some things aren't. I can tell you some of the things. I can tell you things generally. One of our big things as a company starting out was we wanted to work with university groups and help bridge the gap between university theatre and professional theatre, because there's not enough training opportunities for people coming out of university. And training on the job, practical training, and Rupert can vouch for this, I hope. He's
definitely.
Yeah, coming from the student background and working with us for a year now. And Will's done the same. He plays... He doesn't play Havisham in the radio version.
Yes, not on the radio.
He's Herbert in the radio. They both come through that. So we are working on the some kind of university's project for the springtime, sort of late spring probably. And then I'm working on a new novel adaptation. For sort of September, October, probably. that's a big project for me. It's
you love
more,
adapting books, don't you?
This is a lot bigger than Great Expectations.
You also love challenging.
It's not a lot bigger in terms of pages. It's similar in terms of pages. It's just more daunting in terms of the type of text that it is, and I think it will merit a different. It has a different approach to it, which is new for me. So it is a challenge.
Wow. Well, good luck with that. that should be interesting for you. Please listen and subscribe to our podcast, The Blackshire Arts Hour, and get excited about Great Expectations launching in 2016. That was an interview that I did with Marcus Baisley and Andrew Crane and also Rupert Sadler. Now I'm going to play you a little bit of a teaser trailer for our Scare Slam, which is the live recording that is happening on the 20th of December.
So, to set the scene slightly, this is an actual event that happened to me while walking down Stroud Green Road when I was on the way out of the house this morning. Stroud Green Road is one of these places that is quite a long thoroughfare, and it's got a long row of shops, and behind the shops there are houses with flats above them. There was a house clearance of some kind going on. I don't know the details because, you know, none of my business, essentially. And so there was a flatbed truck. In the flatbed truck there was a piece of furniture of some kind, I forget exactly what, bedside table or whatever, and a little old telly from like the 90s or something. And that was in the back of this flatbed truck, and there was in between, I don't know, it was a restaurant and a kebab shop or something like that, there was a door that led up to the flats. And as I was approaching it, this little wiry Cockney guy, about 50 or so, comes out carrying a load of stuff, house clearance, in his arms, dumps it in the back of the truck, and goes, whoa, and then goes back inside. I think he shouted something to his mate, who was inside at the time. And what he was carrying, what he put beside this little telly and a bit of furniture, were these four enormous books. They were about, this is going to come across well, or in oral terms, but they were about 2 foot high and about a foot wide and a good 3 or 4 inches thick, all of them. He was carrying a stack of them. They were brown, very old. They were basically grimoires. They were like clearly some the sort of thing that you get when you're a connoisseur of very, very old, weird. and they were just being thrown out in the back of a flatbed truck, and I thought, that's not safe. That this is the prologue to a horror movie. Well done, everyone. I hope I'll be able to get home tonight, but I don't know. I don't know what else was in the flat. I don't know whether they were talking about, you know, at various points, you know, who's going to clean the stuff off the floor and off the ceiling. Don't know how he got up there. What about the stuff in jars? Let's get some gloves first, John. Let's be safe. What about the sarcophagus? Well, it's probably not heavy, but it will be a bit awkward, so we'll do that. What about the portal into the nightmare dimension, John? Well, we'll leave that for Daryl on Saturday. Daryl will enjoy that. This evening's going to be interesting. Anyway, that's probably enough for me. It's probably about time for your first fabulous act this evening, ladies and gentlemen.
That was Duncan Gates, our fantastic MC from the Scare Slam, which we held a couple of weeks ago, which we are playing live for you on Wandsworth Radio on the Blackshire Arts Hour on the next episode.
That
which
wasn't
is the 20th.
Even the scariest story.
That wasn't. From the it night. Gets scarier, everyone. So if you like scary stuff, tune in. If you don't, then still tune in.
Do it anyway. Just make sure you're with a responsible
you
adult.
You should do something that scares you every day.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Matt. You're a walking
let's
cliche.
Let's carve that into a wooden plaque, shall we?
So we've come to the end of the show. This is our last live studio show for 2015. We've I've had a great time doing this show over the last year. We started when Wandsworth Radio launched this year, and it's been great.
Yes,
I've learned so much stuff. Time. Like I'm learning things all the time because I came in obviously, you know, to do a theatre show with no theatre experience, and you know I'm the fresh.
Now you know loads of things.
Yeah, some stuff that I just don't. You know, I'm like, oh, why do I know that?
It's in funtainment. Right?
Yeah.
I never want to hear that word again.
Don't ever say
hashtag infontainment.
So obviously we are the Blackshaw Theatre Company and we do theatre things. And we're going to tell you a little bit about the theatre things we're going to be doing next year.
Yes, absolutely. So we have got in January Call It Even, which is our showcase award winner for this year, being performed as a one night only industry showcase. So we can't squeeze that many people in, but we will have lots of content around it so you can feel like you're there. In May, we're going to be taking part in the Wandsworth Arts Festival, as per usual. If you haven't watched things at the festival before, you really should get involved because it is fantastic. You can check out the website if you just Google Wandsworth Arts Festival. There's a lovely website which will tell you about the things that happened last year. And we're going to be doing a new play called Seeing Black Shuck, which is kind of, it's funny and a bit scary, and it's going to be great, and we'll be telling you all about that. So that's happening in May. And then in November, we've got a top secret, very special big project happening. Ooh. So you've got to tune in next year to find out about that. And of course, we'll be running our new writing nights, and you can find out all about those on our website. You can submit your work, or you can come along as an audience member and submit your feedback, which is the name of the game for those. So our first one next year will be in March.
Yes, and they are very fun to come along to. I'm also really excited about the return, hopefully, of hashtag WAF chat.
Yes, no, that will still be. Woo. I can confirm as a member of the WAF steering committee that WAF chat will be out in force. That's the hashtag for the festival in May. You can find out all about what we've got going on our website, which is blackshawonline.com. Do keep following us on Twitter at Blackshaw Update and find us on Facebook, and you'll get all of the up-to-date information. We also have a very exciting mail out, which we do once a month, so you don't get flooded with information, just enough to keep you going, and you can sign up on our homepage on our website.
Yeah. So we're going to be giving you some of the best bits of the Blackshaw Arts Hour over, well, you know, sort of taking us into the first couple of shows of 2016. And obviously Great Expectations is launching, so tune in for that. And thank you so much to my lovely co-hosts. Obviously we don't have Vicky Weston or Helen Johnson. They are here in spirit. But Ellie and Matt, you're always fantastic to be in the studio with. Matt, people talk to me all the time about your film reviews. They're Aww. Like, that guy, he really knows how to review a film. Did you just make fun of my Australian accent?
No, I did it. I was doing American.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I didn't wear my accent hat.
That's okay. So, yeah, tune in next week. Not next week, sorry. On the 20th of December for our live broadcast of the Scare Slam. And we will be back with you in 2016.
Yeah.
In the future.
In the future. The scary future. Bye, everyone.